Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's true. It's true. I wouldn't lie to you about that. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing, the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. Yes, indeed. Got great articles about how to write, about the business, and just how it is to be a person who writes, you know, because that's got its own unique challenges. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And as I mentioned, we got some interviews. We got video interviews. Got a good one coming up in March. But right now, I've talked about it in the past. They're all on there. Great interviews, all kinds of people, all genres, romance writers, YA writers, nonfiction writers, poets. They're all on there. Check it out, authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. Yes, they are. And yes, they have been. So if you live in the Pacific Northwest, definitely, and you write, why haven't you joined? Why? Why haven't you done it? You got to do it. They're a great organization. They give classes, which I teach. Yes, yes, I do. In fact, I will be teaching April 4th. I'll be teaching live in person. Fearless writing, you've heard me talk about it. Well, it's nothing like it when it's live. Just you, me, the other students talking about fearless writing. Yes, so if you're in the Seattle area, you can come to that. But even if you're not, you know, if you want to join the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, but you don't live in the Pacific Northwest, don't worry about it. They have monthly meetings, and those are broadcast over the internet, so you can get those anywhere. Yes, you can. So it's great. And of course, they have a writers' conference every year in September now. One of the best conferences in the country, easily, and they support all kinds of writers, screenwriters, poets, nonfiction, everything. And that's in September, and they're already, people are signing up for it already, and you can do it too at pnwa.org. Yeah. Now listen, February 29th, I'm going to be teaching online fearless writing. What that means is if you got yourself an iPhone or an iPad or just any kind of built-in camera for your computer, you can come join an online, live, face-to-face, digitally anyway, Fearless Writing Workshop, February 29th. And then the next week, March 7th, I'm going to be doing Fearless Marketing, same way. Yes, indeed. Fearless Writing, Fearless Marketing, online. So if you're not in Seattle, where I happen to live, don't worry about it. You can do it from anywhere, California, Zimbabwe, New York, doesn't matter. Spots are filling up. I can only do so many of these people, can only so many students. So check it out at williamknauer.com. That's where you can sign up for. Okay, today, I'm so glad I got today's guest on. I love this young woman. I met her through my time at Writer's Digest, and things are taking off for her. So I got her on the show. Her name is Jess Safaris, and she is the author of Once Upon a Word, a Word Origin Dictionary for kids, and she's also an award-winning innovator of digital content and marketing solutions and a prolific online and print journalist, having served as the executive director of marketing and communications for Gotham Ghost Writers. Before that, she served as digital content director and content strategist for Writer's Digest and Script, and she still occasionally writes for Writer's Digest. Her 9 years of experience in digital and print content direction and marketing include such roles as editor-in-chief of How Magazine, an online content director of How and Print Magazine, as well as writing for The Hot Sheet, the Denver Business Journal, ABC News, and the Memphis Commercial Appeal. She spends much of her spare time researching curious word histories and writing about them at uselessetymology.com. Jess, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me on. That was quite the intro.
Well, that's all you, kiddo. That's you. That's you. That's you. That's what you sound like when somebody else talks about you. It sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Can you believe you did all that stuff?
I like it. It sounds like a lot in one paragraph like that.
Yeah, I know. Well, so here's the thing. When you were going to – did you go to school? Did you go to college?
I did, yeah. I got my undergrad from DePaul University in literature, anthropology, and Arabic, and then my graduate degree is in journalism and mass communications from CU Boulder.
Okay. All right. So you went, you just got your basic, like, learn about stuff undergraduate, and you focused a little more on graduate. And was the plan to go into, to say, you know, I'm going to go to school, I want to become a digital content director and content strategist. Was that the plan, or did you not know what you wanted to do?
You know, that came from, it was sort of an evolution. I knew that I wanted to write for a living. I knew that I wanted to get into any sort of publishing. But I found that I was really good at getting internet points across a lot of different platforms. And over time, I learned how to become, you know, kind of a multimedia strategist across those platforms. As I collected roles and as I learned to take advantage of those things, I was learning what people were connecting with, the kind of stories that people were reading, the words they were looking up to learn about words, et cetera.
Interesting. So, all right, so you knew you wanted to write. Now, how? At what point in your life did you know you wanted to write? How young were you when that happened?
Oh, I think fairly immediately. I was always into creative writing when I was a kid. I wrote a lot of stories when I was younger. And then by the time I was in undergrad, I was doing internships and side jobs in writing and social media and blogging. I used to write on LiveJournal when I was a kid. And then ultimately that evolved into like several iterations of my own blogs.
Right. Right. And so you grew up with the internet. You're like my son.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Okay. I'm sorry to date myself, but you grew up really with it. Like, you probably have very little memory, if any, of life without it.
My earliest memories of the internet definitely involve that dial-up noise from AOL.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Mm-hmm. So you still have that. Soon, a couple of times, people will not remember even that, Jess. And so, all right. So you were right in there early on. And so you discovered, you said you sort of figured out, you began to sort of learn how to work with it. Because, you know, the reason I'm interested in it is a lot of writers, they're older than you, a lot of the people I have to talk to, and they're very confused by the digital marketing. They're frustrated by it. They find it mysterious. Obviously, you do not. Do you ever try to teach people about it, teach classes in how to use it and how to sort of demystify it and understand it?
Yeah, actually, I have. When I was the editor of How magazine, I wrote an online course on SEO, basically using a variety of tools to identify the keywords that people are looking for in your particular subject matter, and then ensuring that your content strategy across, you know, social media, your blog, if you have a print publication, if you have another online platform, ensuring that the topics that you, you know, your core topical areas that you write about are applicable across those platforms, and then use the right terms so that people can find them.
Right. Now, when you sit down to write stuff, how much of that kind of thought is in your mind? How much is it just, I'm just going into the topic, whatever it is, and how much of that kind of thinking permeates your work as you're writing?
It completely depends on the context. In a professional setting, say when I was at Writer's Digest, my objective was to, first of all, determine what people needed that they weren't receiving in the writing world, what kinds of advice, what
right.
kinds of topics they were looking up, and the ones that they weren't getting. So, you know, say we found that people wanted more information about audiobooks, and I say this because I'm writing an article for Writer's Digest right now about audiobook readers. Say, you know, people want to learn how they're produced and everything. So I would go into Google Analytics and Google AdWords, and I would determine what sorts of things people are typing into Google to determine, you know, to find out about that topic. And then I would create a content plan based on, on all of the different platforms that Writer's Digest has to craft a content strategy that answers those questions, and then is discoverable ultimately when it runs online and on social media. So we'd have this wonderful feature in the magazine. We would have perhaps a presentation at one of our conferences, and then that would appear in multiple iterations online, and then have native content on each of our social platforms as well.
You're missed.
And then
you're missed. You're missed.
And then on
Jess,
the other. Sorry, go ahead.
No, please. Then the other what?
Well, the other element of this is that when I'm writing about etymology, I scrap all of that, and it's only based on, hey, I wonder what that word or where that word came from, and then I look at it when I write about it.
So when did that start? When did your? Because I've been writing all my life. I never cared where words come from, and we were talking beforehand. My father-in-law, when he was alive, was very interested in that, and he was the first person who introduced me to the kind of curious way that words begin and where they change. So when did that start for you?
And I just love his book, by the way. It's fantastic.
Oh, great. Oh, he would make very happy to hear that.
I've been writing about etymology first on Reddit and Facebook just for fun, and then on my blog called Useless Etymology for, I'd say, about a decade total. Initially, I'd say it was a result of my own curiosity and a couple of courses that were part of my undergraduate degree. The thing is, and the thing that inspired me in the first place, is that, you know, the wonderful thing about this topic is that it's a gateway into the history of literally everything we have a name for.
Yeah.
Every time we say or we write a word, we call upon millennia of human history and the wisdom of all the people who came before us. So, you know, the word etymology itself, it comes from the Latin word etymon, meaning true, the study of the truest sense of words. And as we all unfortunately know, our world is one in which the truest sense of words and events is not always clear.
That's correct.
So I've been doing this these little explorations not only to satisfy my own curiosity, but to dive into the very truest sense of things.
Right.
I remember when I was a kid, I read a lot of Terry Pratchett's, and honestly, I still do, a lot of Terry Pratchett's Discworld books. There's this sub-series that's more targeted to kids about a witch named Tiffany Aching, and she's this thoughtful girl who likes to learn new words and work out how things function, and several times in the series, Tiffany thinks to herself, it doesn't stop being magic just because you know how it works. And I think that's especially true of word origins, because if you understand where a word comes from, you can see how it's this a microcosm of history, this whole thread of minds and discovery of inventiveness and authorship that empowers you to wield that word with greater intention and power in your writing and in your everyday conversation.
And language really, I mean, really, it's language is changed by events, changed by the culture it's planted in, because the meaning of a word changes as it's used in a certain context. I mean, it's going to change.
Absolutely.
Right. And so it's really such a reflection of the way people are thinking at that time.
The English language came from dozens of different cultures, primarily. I mean, we think of like Latin and Greek as being the core sources of the English language. I would say about half of the English words have Latin origins or came to English from Old French via Latin origins. But even those, like the Latin words, about half of those came through Old French during the Norman conquest, when the Norman French invaded England and then mingled with the Anglo-Saxons. And you can tell the difference between words that come from the Anglo-Saxons, who didn't have a written language and cared about things like barns and cows and, you know, fields and things, versus the Norman French, who had a written language and had this, you know, Latin-derived or Roman-derived culture, which involved, you know, romance and intelligence and philosophy and concepts along those lines. Though philosophy is from Greek, I should say. And then, you know, in addition to that, we've got all these words from, you know, from Africa and from Native American cultures and dozens of others. So it's amazing.
And the Vikings. The Vikings brought all kinds of language. The Vikings were big because they invaded England and they brought like Sky and Window. Those are the two I know for mm-hmm. sure that were Vikings. Now, they had a huge influence. All right, so you got interested, you little word nerd. It's good. You just started just digging in, and you would use words as a portal to learn more. And I have mm-hmm. to say, so you would tweet some of your useless etymology stuff, and I just loved it. I would catch it when it would scroll by on my Twitter feed. I thought it was so funny, a lot of fun. And I understand that your publisher found you for Once Upon a Word. Is that true? Is this true?
That is correct. Yes.
Wow. Wow. So tell me how that went.
Yeah. Okay. So this book was published through Callisto Media's imprint, Rockridge Press. I'd say it's closer to being a traditional publisher than an indie publisher at this point, but
right.
They are a bit different from other publishers. So they don't field proposals from authors or literary agents, usually, as far as I know, but
okay.
they select topics based on search data and then seek out people qualified to write books around those topics. So,
all right.
So they'll determine, and this will go back to sort of the way I think about, content development for Writer's Digest, like I was talking about a minute ago. So they determine what book topics people are searching for that don't yield many results, and they seek out influencers who, meet the needs of those queries. So I think in my case, the queries in question were around word origins for kids and dictionaries for kids.
Right.
I think they also do a lot of cookbooks as well, which makes sense considering a
sure.
lot of people with specific dietary needs will search for cookbooks that may or may not have things turn up. So they'll do like keto or paleo
right.
or gluten-free cookbooks.
Right.
In my case, they found my etymology blog and the social media accounts that were associated with them, which at the time I think had about like 3,000 followers all told.
Right.
So not huge, but decent in size and active enough so that when I post something on the blog or on Twitter, people read it. And they had an acquisition editor who was just super fun to work with, reached out to me on my blog, set up a call, proposed a rough idea for the book, which was pretty loose. And that was back in June. I signed on in July, and then I finished the first draft in September. So it was pretty quick.
Wow. Whoa. Jesus. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you know what, though? I wrote Fearless Writing, I think, once or something like that. So it can be done if you kind of have your vision, right?
Right.
Right. Okay. So you did it out the first few months. How did that go? So before we get, did you like that? Because that was one thing to write. You say, well, let me see what I'm interested in. Because this has been a project of yours. Now it's becoming professional. And so, was that okay? Was it a hard shift, or was it easy for you to do?
Because I had been writing about the subject for a long time, I was able to use a great deal of my past research when developing the definitions. So it wasn't as if I was working from scratch, but it was a lot of work in a short amount of time, and I would have perhaps preferred a couple of months more to work on it. But then the deadline did keep me on task, and it wasn't impossible by any means.
Right. But you liked it emotionally, I mean. Did you like it emotionally, being hired to do something that you had been doing sort of just on your own? Did it drain any of the fun out of it, or was it just as fun?
Honestly, I think it was validating that other people wanted to know more about it. I knew people
right.
had read about it on Twitter, but it meant that people were actively searching for something that I enjoy writing about. So
right.
I don't think it did suck any of the fun out of it. So I did, I've mostly written for adults. A lot of the content on my blog is not only, written tonally for adults, but it's kind of adult in theme. So, I worked with these editors who helped me polish the book and nail the right tone and level
right.
for kids. So one of them was a freelance editor who was a mom, and she helped immensely. And, she was like, kids probably wouldn't understand this. Maybe frame it for someone who's in middle school. And that helped a lot.
Yeah, because what was your age? What was the – because my wife published a children's book, which she had – but it was really, so specific, I think it was like 7 to 10, you know, was kind of the age they were looking at. And so, because, you know, a 5-year-old is not an 11-year-old. It's a big difference. And so when you were picturing a child in your mind, what age did you have in mind?
They had targeted ages 9 to 13. So this is roughly like middle school. A clever kid who likes words as low as age 5 to 7 could have a great time with it. And then adults who are older and just want to know the basics of word origins, who, you know, may not know one of the 800 words in there, so might also find it really enjoyable.
Now, would you have, if someone had given you this for your birthday when you were 9, would you have been happy about it? Would you have been?
Oh, I would have been delighted. I would say that's basically who I was writing it for, is 9-year-old
Good.
Me.
Good. Oh, it's perfect. And so is it funny? Do you let are you allowed to let your sense of humor eke in there a little bit?
I did. In fact, they specifically asked me to retain a degree of humor, though I'd say I definitely took it down a notch in terms of appropriateness.
All right. But you still kept your humor, but just weeded out some of the adult stuff. Not like the kids would all understand it, but we just don't want to be the one to share it with them. So, okay, good. Good, good. So you kept your sense of humor, and so you finished it, bing, bang, boom. It's going to be out. Well, so today, boys and girls, it's the 18th of February, but next Tuesday is its launch date, its official publication date. And it's not the kind of book you do a book tour on, but I assume you have some plans in mind for how to let people know about it. I've seen it already, you know, circulating around the various things. Have you got a strategy in mind?
Yes, indeed. You know, what's funny is a nice thing about what Calypso provides is some advice on, you know, marketing strategies. And as
right.
a content marketer, I was well familiar with everything they said. But one funny thing that I thought they included on their list of recommendations for promoting the book was to take a picture of the book with your pet, because apparently that sells more books than any other
wow.
strategy.
Oh, God. Well,
and,
I have,
you know,
a cat. I've
got
to remember
pets,
that
though.
For my next book.
Yeah, do it. I have 4 pets, so I'm working on the pet photography with each one. You know, and now I've got to get all 4 of them in there.
So you've dug into all these words. Now, in all the digging you've done, have you ever run across some words that, like, writers in particular would be interested in, that their etymology might be of use to a writer?
Yes, indeed. So many. Let's see. So I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I told you this would be great. A couple of ones that I just really love, that I just really love are, so thesaurus essentially means treasure trove, and it comes from the Greek thesaurus, meaning treasury or treasure chest, which I think is super cool.
That is cool.
The word protagonist was originally a theatrical term. It comes from the Greek protagonistes, which was a word for the main actor in a play. It means first competitor, actually.
Really?
You know, and then your antagonist is your actor or competitor who's moving against the protagonist, which is kind of neat. Funny enough, antagonist is older than protagonist, at least in English.
Really?
It was adopted in the late 1500s, I believe, as a word meaning, you know, someone who contends with another sort of person in any sort of sport or contest. So,
right.
a real person. Whereas a
right.
protagonist was always a performer or a fictional player in a story.
Interesting. So an antagonist could be a real person, a real pain
mm-hmm.
in your butt, but a protagonist is always a fictional person. That is kind of interesting.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
You know what it reminds me of?
Well,
some people, this is not a religious show, but some people who are sort of atheists will believe in evil but not good. It's easier to believe in evil sometimes than good. I feel
that's a good point.
Yeah, I think it's linked to the antagonist thing. Okay, what else? What are the good words you got?
All right. So the climax, you know, the part
yes.
of the story where the action, emotion, or tension reaches its highest point. It is, since it's the height of the action or tension in the story, the word climax comes from the Greek climax, which literally means ladder.
Ladder? Really?
Ladder. Mm-hmm.
How did that make its way over to, how did the word for ladder migrate over to, just because that's where the scene reaches its peak, and so they derived it from that? That's interesting.
So during the Romantic period, and I would have to verify the exact date when this happened, people started writing about literary theory. It may have even been as early as the 1500s or so. When people started writing more theoretically about stories, they tended to draw from Greek and Latin words, sort of in the way that the medical and scientific professions tend to pull Latin and Greek words in as well. More,
right.
You know, we need a fancy way to speak intellectually
right.
about this topic.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right. As soon as you put
so
it in Latin or Greek, yeah.
Right.
All right, go ahead. Go
they
ahead.
Tend to have a lot of symbolism.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So, okay, so the book is coming out in a week. What do you think about that? How do you feel about being, and you've been writing a lot of stuff. You've been talking to authors. You've been writing for authors. You're an author of stuff, but now you've got an actual book. What do you think about that? Has it hit you? Do you care? Does it not matter? Is it like everything else you do?
No, I regularly have trouble not, you know, squealing over the box of author copies that I receive. When I see it in a bookstore for the first time, I think I might just collapse.
Wow. Wow, that's so, and this all just got sprung on you. That's so kind of cool the way it happened. You didn't really have to do anything, but just keep doing what you like to do. Yeah,
exactly. It was a pure passion project.
Oh God, it's, you know, it's just the key. It's the key, Jess. I'm telling you that the stuff that just comes easiest, that you don't even think about, that seems like a hobby. I just think that's where our genius is. I do. I think that's where that's the seat of each of our genius. And if we just follow that, we're good to go. And I think that this book is just a perfect example of that, if you ask me.
It's so true.
Yeah, no, it is.
You know, the old adage, like, write what you know. I've always thought that wasn't so much true as, you know, write what you want to know.
Yeah. Write what you know you're interested in. How about that? Write
mm-hmm.
what you know
exactly.
you care about. Because, you know, if you write, when I was a kid, I felt like, well, I know about Wiffle Ball and Captain Crunch. And what the hell do I know about? I felt like nothing. But absolutely, write about what you know you care about, what you want to know. That's good. Well, all right. So this is good. So it'll be out. So if somebody wants to buy it for their kid, or maybe some kid is listening to this, I don't know. I don't rule out that possibility.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way to get it, find out about it, et cetera? Or about you,
well,
you, period.
Oh, sure. So they can read my blog anytime at uselessetymology.com. The book is available at Barnes & Noble via IndieBound and on Amazon. It'll be in all major retailers and a great deal of indie bookstores as well. And I'm looking forward to all of that. They can also tune into, or they can also read my past work on Writer's Digest. You can follow me at Adweek if you're also interested in
right,
in advertising.
Right. Yes, that's right. All right, good. And do you have your own actual just website, or is the blog really serve as your website?
I have a portfolio site at jessetheferris.com, but I would say I put the majority of my love into the blog. So
right.
I would, if you're interested in word origins, if you're interested in me, you're also interested in word origins, and you can find out about that there.
Right. You see, people, listen, maybe you don't want to write a thing mm-hmm. on word origin, but find something that just tickles your fancy and follow it, and you never know where it's going to go. You don't know. You could be on a show with me talking about it. All right. So, Jess, I'm not quite ready to let you go just yet. Our time is almost up. But I'd like you to finish this sentence. If writing, all the writing you've ever done, has taught you anything, it's taught you what?
Ooh. I would say to wield your words for good and for the cultivation of knowledge.
Oh, wield your words for good. Amen. I agree. Be a force for love, for God's sakes. It won't kill you. Jess, thank you so much. You're awesome. I'm glad to hear you're doing so well, and I can't wait for your next book, whatever it is.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Phil. I am so looking forward to listening to your next episode and catching this one again.
All right. Take it easy, Jess.
Thank you, Bill.
Oh, people, do good. It's true. You know, it's true. I tell my students in my personal essay classes and memoir classes, anybody I teach, if you want, the best way to have a writing career, I think, is to leave your readers feeling better at the end of what you wrote than they did at the beginning. You just, because we all always want to feel good. It's true. Nobody ever wants to feel bad. We do a lot, but we don't want it. No, we don't. We want to feel good. Speaking of feeling good, I want to thank my wonderful producer, RJ Jeffries. Thank you, RJ. You are awesome. And to all of you out there, go find something you love to do. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. You don't have to know where it's going to go. Just know that you love doing it, and do it, and do it, and do it, and you will be fine.